football on Off the Ball.
You know, what he did for the club, he changed the trajectory of it completely. But Thomas Frank, I'm loving the Thomas Frank era. I'm having a great time.
You were sceptical initially.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
And you are welcome to episode 94 of the Racing Pod on Off the Ball with John Duggan and Johnny Ward. Remember, we're here every week with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews, bit of crack as well. A reminder, folks, the full Off the Ball Racing Pod is now free wherever you get your pods. How are you, Johnny?
Very well, JD, very well.
I see the 2026 Irish racing fixtures are out. 391 meetings and racing on Good Friday to be held at the Curragh, but not much. I mean, it's pretty much same as usual apart from that. Thurles obviously saved for jumps racing.
Yeah, I had a Catholic upbringing, I suppose. Where
so did I.
Yeah, my parents were, even for the time that they were brought up in Ireland. So like, I suppose my father was born in 1943 and my mother 10 or 11 years later. So it was very, very much a Catholic country and very like rural Ireland particularly. So my parents were, for whatever reason, were quite liberal. But I do remember us not eating meat on Good Friday. I do remember us not eating meat on Good Friday. And for some reason, it was probably the only day all year we had fish.
Did you ever eat meat and feel guilty or do it on the sly?
Probably, but...
I remember I had a steak in my teenage years and felt, oh, I shouldn't be doing this.
Do you know, you know the way you think, why did people, like in yesteryear, why were they so indoctrinated? Or why did they act in such a way? But we were the same. Like I was taught about all these sins when I was growing up and all these things. But I do specifically remember, even though our parents were very liberal and basically almost stopped, my father kind of stopped going to mass, which was even unusual. But he is quite a single-minded person. But I do remember on Good Friday, in the East Galway, we got fish. Even though I love fish, it was the only day all year we got fish and I loved it. But for some reason, we don't have racing on Good Friday until now.
We'll be at the Curragh next year. The Galway Hooker in Euston Station was the only place you could get a pint on Good Friday, as I can remember.
Really? So you could buy it at the station?
Yeah, you could, because it's some travel thing.
Yeah.
Before they opened the pubs eventually.
There's something about that bar, like the Galway Hooker, because it's quite transient, but you meet people there if you're waiting for a train who are not waiting for a train. So it's like they're just waiting for the train that isn't coming.
Well, like me.
Is it Good Friday again? But the Galway Hooker, it's like, you know that point when you're waiting on a plane or a train.
Oh, they're the worst ones because you don't leave and then you've got to get on.
Yeah. And of course, you're in there and have kind of...
You're not allowed to drink anymore.
You can on the Enterprise, but the Galway Hooker. Wasn't there a story about? Was it? Did Niall Quinn have the story about just getting on the train so that they could have a pint and getting the train back? And because it was Good Friday, but I think it's probably time that we've racing on Good Friday. God knows we have it every other day.
Now the Irish Champions Festival. Was there anything you took out of it? I thought Delacroix was very good in the Champions Stakes. What else struck me? It was great to see maybe a smaller yard from England as well. Eve Johnson, Houghton Johnson win the National Stakes as Avatera, and then Al Riffa, very impressive in the St Ledger, and probably will be going to Melbourne now.
Yeah. I was pretty much on football duty both days. I was here and I was in Chicor on Sunday, and I felt bad for missing this weekend. And I suppose when you're working at the races as I do, I was racing the Friday night and same racing tomorrow. It does get a little bit kind of transactional for you, but I do love these days racing, and I feel like Champions Weekend is just phenomenal. There is an international element to it. Proper British runners coming over here, even runners from Japan. And I feel like the Aidan O'Brien really commits to it. Like, he runs his horse against each other. I like that. And you see, again, in the Moyglare, kind of a surprise result, as was the case last year. But I felt like as much as we didn't have Ombudsman in the Champion Stakes, it was a fascinating race to watch. And I don't know about you, JD. I don't remember them coming up the stands rail before like that. It seemed like
it's always the other side.
Yeah, and I remember like Falbrav and Daryl Holland having all that traffic problems. That was that's over 20 years ago now. The first one I was at. But Delacroix, I suppose the difference in the very good racehorse is that turn of foot that he showed to win the race very quickly. And he beat Anmas, who probably ran his race again, even though it was three parts for length, was very ready at the line. And I thought it was a very good performance. And he's a fascinating stallion prospect going forward. But I did sort of think about it as well, like, you know, oh, we're really excited to send him off to stud so that he can be the sire of racehorses who retire at 3 years of age, like he is going to. You know, so it's kind of, flat racing for me is far better than jumps racing, but there is that kind of commercial underlying aspect too that I suppose is disappointing from a sporting perspective, but it was a good race to watch.
It's great from an integrity perspective, though, because they're always trying so hard to win. And what about Scandinavia's strong staying performance to win the English St. Ledger at Doncaster?
Yeah, it was a hard race to weigh up, and a race in which the betting was quite volatile in terms of what was the actual pick of the Ballydoyle horses. In the end, Lamborn went off 11-4, and Stay True was well back to 11-2. Carmers went odds on and run, I think, even though he finished fifth. So it was a race in which stamina really came into play. Scandinavia's a proper stayer, and for whatever reason, since siring the Derby winner last year, we really haven't seen many Justify horses at all, apart from the ill-fated Ruling Court and Scandinavia. So he's gotten a classic winner here, and he's a very, very likeable horse, Scandinavia, and as much as the staying horses commercially aren't anywhere near as valuable as the likes of Delacroix, he's going to potentially be a Gold Cup horse that the public will really like going forward. And he's kind of a great name as well, Scandinavia. It evokes a lot of things in one's head about you know, those northern countries, and a lot of these one word names, Sue Magner names now, are quite enigmatic. But Scandinavia looks like he could have a proper career as a stayer, because he really does stay very well. And I'd say he's a great chance getting 2.5.
Have you been to Scandinavia?
I went on a stag in Stockholm, which was a terrible idea. I don't mind calling out my brother-in-law for that. It was like a stag in Stockholm run over 3 nights, where we basically just went to an Irish pub every night and paid probably 2.5 times what we could have paid in Temple Bar. Although I'm sure a lot of crack was had. I have been to... I actually think that's it.
Denmark, no Norway.
No, I haven't actually. Yeah, so it's on the bucket. I love to go to northern Norway, like Northern Light stuff.
Bodø/Glimt, yeah.
I've been to Iceland, but that doesn't count, I think. I'm always a bit confused with Scandinavia.
Iceland's
funny, because when you get there, there's this real, like, really cold air. And I went there during, what was it? Dundalk were playing, so it was probably like July, August, and the cold air, it's so refreshing that hits you when you get there. And expensive, but really cool place.
I'm always going to make the joke about frozen food supermarkets, but
I remember going to Iceland as a student. Right.
Brave Inca sadly died this week at 27.
Ah, what an era that was, JD. Like, you know, I think maybe we all had our favourites. Archibald was probably my favourite. But I do remember the Archibald, like Brave Inca, Hardy Eustace race. I think I've never looked forward to a jumps race more.
Probably the greatest jumps race I've ever seen.
It was just like...
2005, Champion Hurdle.
You had three... And they weren't the only contenders by any stretch.
Oh, there's loads of them back in front, according to Twile.
Yeah, and like there were all these different...
Essex,
like, and somewhat iconic Irish yards that even have, like, you know, Edward O'Grady's passed since, Michael O'Brien passed, and the likes of Colin Murphy wouldn't have, you know, even retired since, now come back training, but you had all these different yards represented, and it was just the different characters. Like, Archibald was such an enigma of a horse. It was hard to... Did you call him a dog, or did you call him a horse who gave it all on the bridle but had no more left to give? And that was the day where, memorably, Noel Mead told Paul Carberry how to ride a horse, and Paul Carberry said, "Never tell me how to ride a horse again." Actually, that was afterwards at Punchestown, because Noel was such a believer in Archibald. But the problem with Archibald was that if he didn't sit off a strong pace, he was vulnerable to a stare like Hardy Eustace. But that particular day, I backed Brave Inca each way, and I just thought it was the most solid bet. I couldn't see him out of the top three, and he wasn't quite able to go with those two, but he was the hardiest horse, and he started off winning Bumbers, and then he went back to hurdles rated something like 90 because he was so well handicapped. And, you know, even his Supreme Novice win over
War of Attrition,
like, that was... I remember going to there's a betting shop on Marlborough Street, and I'd gotten into racing maybe only a year or two beforehand. And we had basically all my friends there, pretty much all my friends, the set we met in a betting shop. And in those days, if you wanted to have a bet, you had it in the betting shop. And it was a brilliant social It was a brilliant social outlet for a lot of people of all different sizes, wealth and means and everything. And then we decided that we'd go to a pub for Cheltenham. And I don't think I've ever had as much crack as those early days in Cheltenham. And I remember specifically having a €20 double, some dog that won at 4-1 into Brave Inkat to win the Supreme. I think he was like 9-2 or something like that. And that was the first race of the festival. And like that was a lot of money for me at the time, still is probably. But it was just like, you know the way, like the first race, you're having your first...
The beer. Irish banker.
The Irish banker. He wins. He beats like a well-touted kind of runner-up. And he was such a likeable horse. Like he was well-named. All of the characters involved. Colin Murphy, really likeable guy. Brilliant era.
A.B. McCoy then brought him to win that champion hurdle in 2006 when War of Attrition won the Gold Cup that year. So there was a real omen in that 2004 race, the Supreme Novices hurdle. One thing I kind of noticed about, watched it back yesterday, both races, you wouldn't know who the owners were. You didn't really know who Archibald or Max Joy or Hardy used to Sir Brave Inkat. The owners, maybe the sport is now dominated by a select few owners, and maybe that's something that's changed in the game.
I would speculate that in those days, you didn't have the point-to-point scene run to the extent now that everything is snapped up that is showing promise, but is in a shop window and is bought for 400, 500 grand after winning a point-to-point. I'm speculating, but I'd say in those days, point-to-point was more of a sort of a gentleman's thing and a gentlewoman's thing, where basically, you know, it was a thing that happened on a Sunday, but it wasn't as commercial. And National Hunt Racing was a little bit more unpredictable in terms of where the good horse came from. Like Brave Inkat started off showing very modest promise. So yeah, he was a late developer. And it was like, you know, the horse that we got involved in at that time, me and myself and my mates, cost about 14 grand, didn't have a bad pedigree. And he just mushroomed into a very good horse. And that happened a lot more. Whereas now, the other big difference is that the good horses are staying in Ireland. They weren't being shipped off to England. I've a major issue with the way National Hunt Racing has gone. I think the romance is long gone out of it, and maybe that's just me. And I'm definitely a victim of nostalgia in many ways, where I'm romantic about the past, even though a lot of the times I don't have anything to offer to make the future better. But I'm romantic about that era because National Hunt Racing was much more the people's game at that time.
Yeah, Archway was the sire of Hard Eustace, was not a well known sire. And on the other hand, though, you did have like Jenny Pittman went, I think, to Ballsbridge in the mid-80s and bought Garrison Savannah, Gold Cup winner, Royal Athlete, Grand National winner, and S&S, who won the Void Grand National. And then Tom Costello at Eclair would sold a good few Gold Cup winners, including Best Mate to Jim Lewis.
Yeah.
So it has changed, and it's been kept in-house now, but it's been kept in-house by, I suppose, a very competitive market where, you know, big owners said, you know what, we want to get involved in this, or we're going to compete against each other. And when they start competing against each other, that's when you have... less of the romantic stories that Brave Inkat might have been for the syndicate that won with it.
Well, the good horses now seem to either come from France or the point-to-point sphere, or sometimes from the flat. Personally, I don't get point-to-points. I don't see, and it's a bit like breeze-ups, I don't see why you would gun a horse to win a four-year-old maiden before he then goes completely backwards. Because if you're developing a National Hunt horse like the great trainers did, you don't gun him to win a point-to-point as a four-year-old for commercial reasons. The same as with the breeze-up. Why would you... Like, I saw a horse running the other day who was a really good breezer, and his second start, he was very, very keen. And the trainer was pointing out, I think the rider was pointing out after the first start, so I don't remember the name of the horse. It's like, the trainer's done a really good job to chill this horse back out. It's like, so this is all, like, buying a horse in the breeze-ups, and Ruling Court's an example that worked out very well, but, like, why would you gun a horse at that stage of his career to run as fast as he can over two furlongs when it's contrary to what everyone should think of the development of the horse? And why would you gun a horse to win a four-year-old point-to-point? And for me, it's only a small number of people that are benefiting from it, and everyone can do it, everyone can train them. But it was interesting talking to Eddie Power, who trained a winner late of Edward O'Grady, the horse, at Ballinrobe, and he said, I'd have a horse in point-to-point who won, yet the horse who finished second was selling for three times the value of mine, and I couldn't figure this out, so I'm kind of gone off point-to-points. But I'm not sure where point-to-points are going. I think they're not as... they're too commercial for me, and unfortunately... This is a long-winded way of saying I think the randomness of the horses of that time and the different owners is less and less now.
We got Listowel starting on Sunday for 7 days, the Harvest Festival. 96,000 people were there last year, including over 28,000 on Ladies' Day and the Friday last year. I'd never been. I'd love to go. I won't be going next week, but I'd love to go sometime. Have you been?
I think my Listowel debut was... I might have been there during COVID. It's definitely, yeah, I think that was the festival, and that was kind of one of those grim experiences of being there as an owner, but there was nothing happening. But I was there last year for the last 2 days, and it's kind of old fashioned, because Listowel as a town is part, like Kerry, you saw the big scenes in Tralee last week when Kerry beat Sligo and all that, and like Tralee is way down the list in terms of tourism in Kerry. Like, it's basically Killarney, Dingle, West Kerry, South Kerry, and smatterings of other regions. But for Tralee to have an event like that and to have become a football town is a big thing. And Listowel being in North Kerry, as much as it's the Writers' Festival and the Harvest Festival, the likes of Castle Island and those towns up in the north of Kerry, they don't get the tourism that they get down south. Like Killarney, it's unbelievable, the tourism down there, except for the racing, where Listowel, you can't get accommodation because it's not able to cater for the crowds, and the people go to Ballybunion and places like that. But it's kind of like an old school feeling to it, where it genuinely does feel like a bit of a harvest festival, where the farmers come in and they've done their work for the summer and the autumn, and they spend a few quid and they go to the bars, and it's a unique town, and it's a unique festival.
Pat Healy, obviously a photographer, well-known photographer involved in Listowel as a Kerry man. Have you been to John B. Keane's?
I haven't actually. Last year I went to a bar afterwards, and it was just so manic. I was just trying to, as I get older now, I'm more inclined to try to find somewhere quiet, I think, than the madness of it all. So John B. Keane's, I think, was just too busy. Great stories about people going in there for a couple of pints and staying all day because they just couldn't leave. What a mark he and his son have made on the town.
So we're looking at the weekend's race, and Johnny, where will we start? We start with the Airgold Cup, 3:35 on Saturday. What good to soft ground? They're predicting 25 runners, probably the race for the North in whether, I know it's a Scottish race, but a lot of the Northern English trainers are big into this. The Airgold Cup, what are you looking at? 6 furlongs. Have you narrowed it down to a few?
Yeah, this wouldn't be, I wouldn't be watching these horses every day, put it that way. But one horse I would see a lot is Go Atletico. I was hoping that the ground would be a bit softer.
It could get softer because the rain is forecast.
Yeah, not when I looked earlier now, and obviously the forecast can change. Rain will fall, maybe not enough to make it any worse than go to soft. But I'm inclined to give Go Atletico a chance, just at the prices. And with William Hill,
33-1.
Top price, 33-1. He has already won a Premier Handicap where he won the Scurry at 20-1. That was in the middle of July, 2 runs back. And I actually felt he just looked right back to his best that day. And in Galway, they took it. I remember asking Aidan McGuinness about this afterwards, and he definitely had an excuse about the run. But he didn't run badly, and he doesn't. 7 furlongs just doesn't really seem to suit him. He is a sprinter. And he's gone over there now, 8 pounds higher than the Curragh. But if you saw the way he travelled at the Curragh, and the ground would be in his favour, I feel he's capable of a big, big run here if Oisín Orr, who's an excellent rider, can cover him up.
There's a rumour going around that on another platform that you tipped a 50-1 winner last week. Is that true?
Tango Flair, yeah. In the
Did you back it?
I did not back it, unfortunately. I'm not backing horses as much now because of the difficulty in getting on and having to bet on the show, and even, like, we're going for a mortgage at the moment. These are all, seriously, these are factors. So, and I will, you can ask all the guys in William Hill about this. Affordability checks are a real, real difficulty for people punting. Like, and it's
not a sickening feeling, though, when you have a 50-1 winner and you
Not really. Like, so, I mean, the last bet I had was Ireland to beat Armenia.
Right.
And do you know what I mean? I'm betting sporadically. I have a decent bet on, but I'm betting sporadically. But with Tango Flair, if I didn't back him at 50-1, he's even bigger on the exchanges. So my options in actually even backing him are limited enough. And there was a worry about the ground, but I don't mind that at all. I tipped up 3 horses that day, won them one at 50-1, and I have tipped him before when he kind of disappointed. So I had a great belief in trainer Pat Foley as a trainer. And there was a lot of logic to the selection, and I was delighted one at 50-1. The other 2 horses didn't run so well, including my nap here.
Yeah, it's interesting that sometimes people sometimes get scared by odds. Forget about the odds.
Mm.
What are the odds? They're just an opinion from an odds compiler. Look, if a horse drifts markedly, and we've seen that, and then doesn't perform, then okay. But Go Atletico, just because he's 33-1, shouldn't put anybody off.
No, he's also 33-1 in a race with
25 runners.
So if they all had the same chance here, they'd be 24-1. So he's not actually that big of a price. There's some, like, Carmens was sent off 10-1 in his debut at Ballinrobe. So sometimes there are markets that just don't make any sense. There's actually, and you're friendly with all the Shamrock Thoroughbred lads, Gleneagle Bay on Saturday was one of the daftest prices. I absolutely have no idea how he was sent off that price in a competitive handicap, thoroughly exposed at Leopardstown. That was, in hindsight, one of the craziest things I've ever seen. And I was talking to a bookmaker coming back from Ballinrobe on Friday, and he was talking about how you make a book and the old art of making, like bookmaking, actually making a book. And we were speculating how I would get on as a bookmaker, and I basically volunteered straight away. Like, I wouldn't last a night because I'd be far too strong on a horse that I'd be taking on. There'd be good reason towards taking it on, but I'd take it on so aggressively that if it won, I'd be just like, I'd have no more money left to pay out. So there's an art to, like, Gleneagle Bay would have been interesting. If I were the bookmaker there, I would have laid that till the cows come home, or tried to anyway. And if you won, even though it was a good lay, I'd be in trouble.
Just in terms of the money that's been put on the Airgold Cup as we record this on Friday, some money for Puro Sangue, Oisin Murphy, riding for Andrew Baldwin, Baldine even. 4-year-old horse, that horse. A Desert Falcon is attracting money into 18-1 with Hills. Fahrenheit 7 got a bit of money for that one as well. They're probably the three horses attracting money at the moment. I've narrowed this down to, Two Tribes, Northern Ticker, Aramaram, Twilight Calls, Go Athletico, and Jubilee Walk. So I'm going to go with Twilight Calls at 20-1 each way. 7 now, only 3 wins and 28 starts. It doesn't have the best strike rate, but once was second in the Kingstown Stakes at Royal Ascot and did well in the Stewards' Cup, would be a surprise winner, but I don't think it can be ruled out. Twilight Calls, he's got a claimer on him as well in this one, Warren Fentiman, for Richard Spencer. £5 been taken off that. Twilight Calls is the horse drawn low in 4, but that 20-1 is my choice selection.
Yeah, and I'd be a big fan of 5-pound claimers in races like this where you have nothing in hand. He actually met a bit of traffic in York the last day, and he's a horse who's not badly handicapped. Would have the class in it. Like, there's a race at Dundalk later this evening that's 13-2 the field in a 14-1 race, which I thought was quite extraordinary. But this is really open renewal of the... You have Northern Ticker likely to go off favourite. Local yard, Michael Dodds up the north. Whether he's all that well handicapped off £5 higher, he's ground versatile. He's only a 3-year-old as well, so he has kind of upside. You could definitely see the case, as you mentioned, for Two Tribes. I suspect the Irish don't have a great record in this race, just looking here now from our past winners. Fozzie Stack won it with Son of Rest in 2018. That's been it in the last sort of 10-odd years, and Fozzie has some interesting runners this weekend, but it's rare that Aidan McGuinness goes to England. I think he goes over for a reason with this one.
The Silver Cup is, I don't know if it's the consolation or not.
It is, yeah.
It's a 225. Guidor was third in the Gold Cup 2 years ago. So Guidor is, 16-1 with Hills, and was in the Gold Cup a couple of years ago and now is in the Silver Cup. So just one to keep an eye on, folks. Harir is only 3, a course and distance winner in July for William Haggis. Could be well handicapped. The money is coming, though, for Noriko, Oisin Murphy, to ride that one. Progressive 4-year-old who's won 4 of her last 5 races. There was money yesterday. I was looking in for Roberto Caro, Sergeant Wilco, and Aberama Gold. There's money today for Silky Wilkie into a price of 12-1 and 5,000-1, also attracting money as we record this, Johnny.
Yeah, very open race. I suppose a word on Richard Hannan, who lost his mother Jo during the week, and just reading lovely tributes to her. So that would be an emotional victory, where Dark 30 to win wouldn't be without a chance as well. He's a horse who's come down a little from the weights and didn't run badly behind Northern Ticker the last day at York. Son of Star Spangled Banner. Noriko's very interesting. Oisin Murphy's ridden her last 5 starts, and she's not winning by especially far. So she's gone from 71 to 90, which is only £19 over the course of that. She's won 4 races and finished second. So I like horses like that. Now, whether she should be as short as she is for this is questionable. I'd probably go with Ben Harir, another one ridden by Oisin Murphy for Haggis, who was third at Ascot the last day. He's a very, very solid 3-year-old as well, who looks like he's progressing.
Okay, so remind us the one you're going for in that one.
I'm going for Ben Harir. Keep an eye out for Bodie Bear as well, for the aforementioned Fozzie Stack. I was at Navan Won a maiden this time in October of last year. Seamus Heffernan rode him. I remember that day he looked like he was in a bit of trouble, went a big price in running and ultimately bolted up, beat a big field. He then won at Cork. I think I was there that day as well in April. It's been a little bit disappointing since, but another 3-year-old, very interesting, tongue tie on for the first time and down to a mark of 90, 7 lengths behind Go Atletico the last day. But I'm going to go with Ben Herrera.
I'm going for Guido each way in the Silver Cup. Newbury stages a Group 2 race, the Mill Reef Stakes, over 6 furlongs, 8 runners. Look, the horse that's favoured is Words of Truth, 2 from 2 in his last 2 races, wins at Ascot and Newmarket. This has been the plan, top connections, what Godolphin, probably the one to beat. There was one I did mark down yesterday, and I see there's money for it at 25-1 now. Gold Queen, kindly, Carl Burke. Knows the time of day. It's been the plan. It was disappointing maybe at Ripon last time, but if you forgive that, maybe it's not a 25-1 shot.
Yeah, we had a race recently where a very highly rated horse was well backed and won. It was 20-1 the day before and went off something like 3-1. Now, there were a couple of non-runners in the race, but I'd be wary of laying a horse here, Rock on Thunder, who's rated 108. Like, that should be good enough to win this race. And the, that 108 is based on his second the last day when he split Life Plan and Do or Do Not at York in the Gym Crack. But there was, he made the run on that occasion, hung a bit under pressure. He was sent off 7-2, so it was well expected that he'd run a big race. And it's the potential, like 94 rated Words of Truth is shorter than him in the market. He's another horse who will be up with the pace. He'll probably get a bit of a lead off Rock on Thunder. And Rock on Thunder, for all that he hasn't run on ground this with an ease in it so far. The dam handled yielding the soft quite well. The dam was actually trained by Eddie Lynham, handled the ground well. So it mightn't necessarily be a problem. In fact, it might even help. It's just we haven't, it's been a very dry summer in Britain, so there probably hasn't really been an opportunity. But just looking at the price with William Hill, 3-1, I don't think there's anything wrong with backing that horse at 3. He's really, really solid chance. Rock on Thunder could make all the running.
We have the Group 3 World Trophy Stakes, the first race in Newbury on Saturday. Good soft ground, 5 furlong sprint, 11 runners. Rumstar has got 2 Group 3 wins this year. The ground, no issue, has run well at the course before. Montasib is a Group 1 winner at Haydock this year, but has never raced at Newbury or over the trip. Rage of Bambi is a Group 3 winner at the course over 6 furlongs in July. Ran well at Haydock last time. Will need to break well. In terms of money, this is one of these races where the top horses are not getting the money. The money is coming from the middle pack, our First Instinct, Cover Up, and Curdos. Curdos has been quite significantly supported the last day or so.
When do you see a 7-year-old of the class of Montasib run over 5 furlongs for the first time after 20 runs? And he even has form over a mile. And that must be, I don't know if William Haggis might have a plan for this horse to run him in one of the big sprints before the season is out. And maybe this is a sort of a little bit of a sightseer. And we spoke about Kieran Fallon riding for him on the apparent handicap good thing, who was backed off the boards the last day in the, at the Curragh and was beaten. But Kieran Fallon riding for Haggis again knows this horse very well. He's a kind of a standing dish in the sprinting division. I think he's worth a chance, to be honest. You look at the ground, it's good to soft at the moment. It will be good to soft, I would imagine, or slightly softer come the race. And there should be a bit of a pace on. And on the peak of his form, he's probably a decent enough price. It is very, very strange that he's never run over 5 furlongs before, and I'm not sure exactly what the idea is here, but that strong pace and soft ground, he's one of those horses that could collapse in the in-running market if he starts travelling well. The chances are he'll come late and he won't quite have the pace to do it, but I'm taking a chance that he does it at this stage of his life. Very, very likeable horse.
Did you know who Danny Cordell Laverack was?
Oh, I've looked this up before. There's some Goran, there's a strong Goran connection, but I forget.
He was a record producer in England, and he ended up training racehorses.
Wow.
He produced records for the likes of, this is according to Wikipedia, the Moody Blues, Procol Harum, Joe Cocker, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Wow.
Involved in the song Go Now, that was a number one in the UK. So
there's a bit of information for today.
He sadly died in the mid-90s in Dublin. The race is named after him. It's the big one in Ireland the weekend is at Goran Park, 2:52 on Saturday. It's a filly's race over 9 furlongs. And a lot of horses here with course form. Purple Lily was running in the Oaks last year and she finished, third? She's only been seen once as a 4-year-old. She did not go to plan at Roscommon, but she's been put in as favourite. Fayum won her first two races at Naas in Killarney, then ran into a decent horse in Barnavara, who is frank the form by winning the Group 2 at the Curragh last weekend. Offshore Bay has got Shamie Heffernan in the place at 14-1, a course and distance winner in June. Needs a bit in the ground, but she might get that. So these are the ones I shortlisted. These are the three I shortlisted. You've got a Dermot Weld horse in there as well, Duressa.
Yeah,
18-1.
You say might get it. I think we can say almost with certainty there will be. It'll be at least soft because it's going to rain on the East Coast plenty today around the East Country, and Gorham will get soft ground, maybe even heavy ground tomorrow. And you're on about, you say the train time. This is like an Atlantic 252, the old station. 252, Danny Cardell. I don't know where you're in Atlantic 2. I wasn't a fan, but it seemed everyone else used to listen to it when we were younger. And Jesse was always painting a picture about how it's going to be, but we didn't have many stations those days. I don't know. I was actually talking to Paul O'Hare, the journalist, lately, and he was saying he used to love listening to Radio 5 Live when he was younger. And I was the same. I used to go 693-909, depending on the crackle on a Saturday.
Today FM came along.
Before Today, of course. So this is talking. We're talking about the
90s,
early to mid 90s here. Yeah, before Today FM came along, and I'd listen to the commentaries. But in any event, Purple Lily here, 15-8 from William Hill. Hard enough to price her up because we haven't seen her in 81 days, and she was disappointing at Roscommon. That's not her true running. She really does like easy ground. I don't think she's in love with the mile and a half, full stop. With the way the yard is going, I feel she'll be very, very hard to beat here. And gate 5 should give Billy Lee sort of a chance to get into manoeuvre. I'm not sure what the visor is about. I don't know if it's a big thing with Paddy Toomey to put on headgear, but she's very solid.
There are horses, though, with course form, and so Tibet has course form, Duressa, as I said. So
Talara.
Yeah, it's not a done deal.
It's not a done deal. The market, there have been a couple of Paddy Toomey horses, including Carmen's and one recently, who've gone off massive prices and won this year. It generally doesn't happen, but Purple Lily will be interesting in the market.
We've got Sam Norris and William Hill on the line. How are you, Sam?
Hi, Jeff. I'm good, thank you. Yeah, how are you?
Not too bad. Is the Argyle Cup your big thing this weekend?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I'm personally looking forward to the start of the jump season so I can stop looking at impossible sprint races, handicaps, group races. Just so hard. But if you like that sort of thing, this is a good weekend.
So where's the money going, Sam, in the Argyle Cup?
Yeah, it's striking the way the betting is just kind of shaped around the younger, the more unexposed horses. You look at the top of our betting, three-year-old, four-year-old, one seven-year-old in there in strike red, then it's 4-3, 3-4, 4. So the punters want these kind of unexposed, improving types. Northern Ticker's our favourite at 6-1. The dogs were kind of barking for this horse on a couple of occasions last season as a two-year-old. We saw good money for him in a couple of races that he won. He got his head in front for the first time at three last time around. So he seems, you know, a very likely type. The one we've kind of laid most significantly over the last 24 hours or so is Pura Songwe, who's 10-1 from 14-1. A horse who hasn't won for a couple of years, it must be said, quite well beaten in the Stewards' Cup by two tribes who reopposes here. The draw's potentially a bit against him as well. He's got gate two. I think the last seven winners have all been drawn double figures. So there was reason enough, I thought, to be against Pura Songwe, but the punters very much pro Pura Songwe. We could do with him getting B. He's ridden by Ashin Murphy, and the Murphy Buick roll up multiples the last couple of weekends have cost us a couple of quid. So, yeah, I'd be keen to see him get beat if we can. But he's the one for the most significant money over the course of the last day or so. But yeah, all those kind of, you know, unexposed horses with more to come are being well backed. Alpha Kellenic is a really interesting player as well. Won the Silver Cup last year and then never went a yard on the next start after that. That was for Craig Lidster, who's now joined Ivan Furtado. Been off the track nearly a year, but holding up well enough in the betting at 14. So, you know, another fascinating younger horse type player in this race.
The draw is that's the one aspect of flat racing I don't like, is trying to figure out what's going on with the draw. I just think, like, and I often think if you're getting a punter into racing, you have to explain the million and 50 things you have to sort of try to figure out before knowing if a horse is worth a bet or not. But it's interesting what Sam says there. The draw in the last few years, 2014, 12, 25, 13. Angel Alexander was 24, 21, 17. So all middle to high over the last...
I don't think Air, though, is not Chester. It's not going to...
It's not obviously straight, but it's still at the same time. How are they going to that side? How will the ground influence? So definitely keep an eye out for the Silver Cup. See if there's an angle in that.
Yeah, the Silver Cup will tell a lot.
Yeah,
it's only an hour before it.
Look at Sand there, kind of, you know, getting a bit emotional about the returning jumps when we're in the middle.
I got a guide sent to me during the week, and it's about 250 pages. And I know about that guide. I was so excited to get the guide, and then I've got to read this now, do I?
Yeah.
I'm so with you though, Johnny, on the draw. I'm so with you. That's the number one reason I prefer jumps to the flat. I thought it's the flat. And I'm like, what do you mean I've got to watch the first 3-4 races on the card to work out where you want to be? Has the draw reversed? What do you mean that I've got to throw out half the field because they're not drawn right? I'd much prefer to look at how a horse jumps. Is he going to handle fences after running over hurdles? Yeah, the draw bores me to tears as well. But
they'll say, oh, there was a front running bias that day. Laytown the other day, they changed the rail alignment because of the water or whatever. So apparently you had to be drawn on the inside. And I was like, Laytown, come on, like it's a beach. But the draw boys, you can back horses some days and you're like, what? Like, you know, for example, even composing at the weekend, was it a bad day to make the run? And it probably was. But to get a punter into horse racing and to explain all of this in over the course of even an hour, you could see why he or she would be like, oh, just back in the football.
I found the jumps, I used to be the A team on the jumps. I used to be crack commando. I used to be, you know, I had a rifle from, you know, it was amazing. Mm. And now I've Punchestown, some of the results of Punchestown I find very, very strange. I mean, Justin Ryan had some like 33-1 winner there. I couldn't work out for head nor tail why that horse won. So maybe a horse had been over the top and everything, all this stuff. So I sometimes find the flat more straightforward. Horses come out, they win. Sometimes they disappoint the big fields, then they come in and win again. They run up sequences. So look, in the Silver Cup, is there any money going anywhere, Sam?
Yeah, the major move in the Silver Cup has been for Noriko, whose form ties in quite tightly with Northern Ticker in the big race. I mean, he beat Northern Ticker at Hamilton. Northern Ticker's favourite for the Air Gold Cup. Noriko can't top the betting for the Silver Cup, despite the fact that he's really progressive. He's gone up almost £20 in a handicap. He's been freshened up for this. He's progressive. The Silver Cup, I mentioned the kind of Gold Cup markets gravitating towards younger, more unexposed horses this year. But the Silver Cup is even more of a kind of race like that. It can be a harder race to win. You get all the improvers in there. Noriko very much kind of ticks those boxes, 7-1 into 11-2. Obviously, if he wins, he pays a nice compliment to Northern Ticker in the big race of the day. So, yeah, I'm not surprised to see we've laid a bit of him, given, you know, what he did to Northern Ticker at Hamilton. Bin Harir, the favourite, the William Haggishard in great touch at the moment. Already won over course and distance. Good effort at Ascot last time around. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the kind of younger horses. A couple of the older types you might have a say in here. Silky Wilkie ran a big race in the Air Gold Cup last year. Carl Burke, another yard that are going tremendously well at the moment. I think they've probably worked back from this since. He's on a massively reduced mark nowadays, so he could go well. And Aberama Gold at 22-1, not friendless at that price. He's just lived in these big handicaps for his whole career. Seventh in the Portland last time around. He only got beat 3 lengths, and I think a proper 6-furlong trip rather than the kind of in-betweeny trip in the Portland might suit him a bit more, Aberama Gold. But yeah, I can definitely see the angle with Noriko. And we should mention Each Way Extra as well. With massive fields in the Silver Cup and the Gold Cup, you can go up to 7 places each way on these races. So giving punters a little bit of a chance in that regard, hopefully.
The Millerie Stakes at Newbury, Sam, his words of truth, probably set to go off favourite for this one, the Godolphin horse.
Yeah, it's been, you know, the best supported of the horses toward the top of the market here. Words of truth, is a 9-4 chance. He's a joint favourite with Into the Sky, but they kind of preferred Words of Truth. He beat Watcher Snoop at Newmarket, who then came out and won a race of his own on the next start, just kind of franking that form. Watcher Snoop's in here as well at 12-1. I would like to see Into the Sky win this, though. Obviously, as punters, you just want to see the horse that you've backed win the race, of course. But in a race where I'm not invested, it would be great for a smaller yard like Jim Boyle, who is a really good trainer, by the way. Doesn't have loads of ammunition, but can definitely train one. This horse bolted up at 80-1 on debut. Look visually very impressive. When you see a horse win like that, you want it to be true. You want it to be believable. You want it to be the real thing. You want him to go and show it on his next start. I gather Connections have turned down some pretty hefty offers for this horse. I always want owners to do well when they do that. because it must be incredibly difficult to turn down big money. So I'm hopeful that Into the Sky goes and wins that. And we shouldn't rule out Rock on Thunder either, who's probably got the best form in the race, second in a Gym Crack last time around to Life Plan, who was well supported by the right faces on that occasion, the Gym Crack. He looks to have the best chance on form, Rock on Thunder. It's just untapped potential for the big two in the market. But yeah, just for the game, I would like to see Into the Sky go and win this and reward his connections who are living the dream.
At the Denny Cordell Philly Stakes at Goran Park, he priced it up with Purple Lily as favourite, Sam. Probably the market is not mature yet, but at least we have a sense of it.
Yeah, they didn't... they weren't very happy with me asking them to price this race. As Johnny kind of touched on earlier, it is a bit of a difficult one to price because you've got a ton of horses who, like a lot of their form is from June, July, and they've had breaks over the main bit of the summer and they're now returning. So you've got Purple Lily and Fayum at the top of the betting. Obviously, Purple Lily holds the best form from last season, which she fifth in the Guineas, third in the Oaks. Disappointing at Roscommon when fancy, but the 81-day absence might point toward something maybe being amiss. Fayum's been off kind of 87 days as well. So it is difficult to get a good grip on those two. We've not laid bundles in the market as of yet. She's a nation of the big price at 25-1, won a maiden that's thrown out a couple of winners subsequently. But again, that was a few months ago. Where has she been? Joseph O'Brien's won this race for the last 2 years, and he only runs one this time around, Lam Sebat, who's a 25-1 shot. But other than the trainer's good record in the race, I can't recommend her too strongly. And maybe a bit of a collector's item to see Aidan O'Brien having a 66-1 shot in a group three. Other than, you know, horses who look like definite pacemakers in group ones, you wouldn't see the Maestro of Ballydoyle have a runner at this kind of price. Even the pacemakers, we don't want to lay too big. So it's weird that he's got one at such a big price. It's a race we're hoping to get a result in. But I think the punters who move into this market will decide the shape of it the closer we get to race time. It was a little bit of a guessing game, albeit Purple Lily has to be a favourite on the strength of her form last year.
Thank you for pricing it up for us, Sam. So Johnny Ward's charity bet, €50 this week. What are you picking, Johnny, for your charity bet? 25 each way or 50 on the nose?
Yeah, I could go with Purple Lily. I'll go with, even though it's a 16 runner handicap, very much against my better judgment. I'm going to go on the nose in the 4.55 Navin. This is a hurdle race for female amateur riders, female riders, sorry. And I'm just counting here, JD. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm on duty tomorrow at Navan for the TV. 5, 6, 7 of the riders I had to ask, I had to find out what their name was, because they're so rarely seen. And that's why the likes of Maxine O'Sullivan in this race is worth so much. She's riding the top weight array of Fortuna. And a lot of the other jockeys they wouldn't have that many rides. So Maxine, who's a really good rider, she's a big benefit in a race like this, even though she doesn't have a claim. But she's riding array of Fortuna, who kind of did plenty wrong at Galway, but still won and should be way more suited to this trip. I love Navan as a jumps track. Absolutely love the big long straight and the stamina demands of the place. For a horse whose form over 3 miles, he should be way more suited to this. And I guess it's hard to put up much against him. So Araya Fortuna win in the 4.55 at Navan.
This is Johnny Ward's charity bet on Saturday, folks. 4.55, 2.5 miles at Navan. Araya Fortuna, #1. Maxine O'Sullivan riding for Tony Martin, 50 on the nose. Sam Norris, thanks so much. Speak to you soon.
Thank you, guys.
Sam Norris and William Hill there. Johnny, thank you so much. And enjoy the weekend's racing and look forward to speaking soon.
Cheers, Judy.
That was the Racing Pod this week. We're back next week.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.